This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
If you developed a good relationship with a babysitter or a pediatrician, would you arbitrarily end that relationship each year and go find a new one? Well, when you stop and think about it, that's exactly what most schools do with students and teachers.
Despite everything that we've learned since then about the importance of the relationship between the child and the teacher, and between the teacher and the parents in elementary school, we're still using this model from the early 1800s in Germany.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll hear my conversation with a veteran school teacher and administrator about his book with a very self-explanatory title, Kids Need the Same Teacher for More Than 1 Year. We'll also spend an academic minute learning if students' brains are elastic enough for learning. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Building relationships takes time. When an adult is put in charge of a group of, say, 24 third graders, it's going to take that adult a while to learn how to deal with the needs and wants and bizarre little idiosyncrasies of each one of those children. And by the time that adult is finally comfortable with that group, off they go to another adult and you get a new group of kids. Well, in most schools in the U.S., that's exactly what happens. David Marshak has a different idea. In his book, Kids Need the Same Teacher for More Than 1 Year, he advocates, well, exactly what the title says. David Marshak was a school district administrator in Vermont and a professor and researcher in Seattle. He has supported and assisted dozens of teachers as they created multi-year classrooms in elementary and middle schools. We spoke last fall about the book and the concept of keeping kids with the same teacher for multiple years.
Well, it has actually, it's an old idea that goes back to the one-room schoolhouse of the frontier. And more recently, there have been many teachers who have created multi-year classrooms during the previous century. There have been different waves of interest in it. One example is that in Montessori schools, children work with the same teacher for 3 years. This generated a lot of interest when Maria Montessori first came to the United States back about 100 years ago. And then when Montessori education was revived in the United States in the 1960s, there was also a lot of interest in multi-year classrooms. And again, in the 1980s, there was a lot of interest in it. But almost all of the interest has come from teachers, not from policymakers. And so the reason that we don't do this in a normative way in our schools, from my point of view, is that the people who make policy, who organize the institutions, who lead the districts and lead the states, don't get it.
You did talk about the history in the old one-room schoolhouse. In the book, you do go into the history of how the age grade way of doing things came about. Just give us a quick little history of that.
Sure. The idea of every June, we have children say goodbye in elementary school to their teacher and start fresh with a new teacher every September for 7 years or 8 years, is really an anachronism that goes back to Prussia, which was the largest principality in what became Germany in the mid-19th century. The Prussians, at the end of the 1700s, really invented what we understand to be public schooling. That is the idea that you would tax people in general to provide schooling for all children. And of course, at that time, they were only educating boys, but they really came up with the idea that children should not really be too emotionally attached to their teacher. And so at the beginning of the 1800s, they created this idea, we're going to give kids a new teacher every year. When Horace Mann, who was the founder of public education in the U.S., creating the common schools in Massachusetts, in the 1840s, when he looked around for a model of common schooling, the only model he found was in Prussia, in Germany. And so he went there with the, you know, you can read about this. He wrote extensive journals about his trip to Germany and came back and basically created this model in the common schools in Massachusetts in the 1840s. And despite everything that we've learned since then about the importance of the relationship between the child and the teacher, and between the teacher and the parents in elementary school, how critical this relationship piece is, we're still using this model from the early 1800s in Germany.
In your book, you focused on four schools that are doing things in a unique way. What about these schools stood out?
So, I've actually have worked with and been involved with multi-year classrooms in many different states. I used to be a school administrator in Vermont, and our school district had many multi-year classrooms. My stepdaughter went to several multi-year classrooms in the state of Vermont. So this is not just a West Coast thing. You can find multi-year classrooms in schools all over the country. I happen to write about four different public schools in the Seattle area, because when I did this research and began this book, I was a professor at Seattle University. And what I wanted to do was to write a book primarily for parents that really described the day-to-day experience of children and parents in multi-year classrooms. So I had the great good fortune of being invited into two public elementary schools in the Seattle area and two public middle schools, again, in the Seattle area. And in the book, I describe these four different schools, the kinds of classrooms that are going on there, the kind of relationships that teachers have with children when they work with them for two or three or four years, and the kind of relationships that teachers and parents have when children are in the same classroom for 2 to 4 years. And the intent of that is really to illustrate, particularly with a lot of direct quotes from parents and teachers, the incredible value of relationship and the way in which the positives of this multi-year relationship far outweigh any potential negatives. So what you're getting at is, you know, the two enormous benefits that come from multi-year classrooms. So the first benefit is that, again, to say the relationship is critical, the sense of safety the child has, the respect the child has, the experience the child has of being cared for by the teacher. And then the other way around, the investment of the teacher in that child's success, all of these are heightened when a child returns to a classroom for a second year or a third year. It's human nature that when we have an adult who cares about a child, that caring will be extended if you extend it over a period of time. So that deepening of the relationship, and then the other piece that goes with that is the deepening of the knowledge. When a child returns to a classroom the second year, the teacher knows right from day one where he or she and the child left off back the previous June or May, whenever it was, and can start right from there. So there's also an enormous efficiency that's gained by having a 2 or 3 or 4 year classroom relationship. It takes teachers several months. If you have an elementary classroom and you have 24, 26, or 28 children show up the first day of school in September or August, it takes teachers several months before they really get a handle on who each child is as an individual. So we're talking about maybe Thanksgiving or even into December, and then there's really only 5 months left in the school year to really put that knowledge to use. So the second year, a child shows up, school starts, and you begin school, the efficient part of school, from day one. If you have a 3-year relationship, you're talking about gaining between 4 and 6 months of highly efficient learning time in 3 years. And so that's an enormous gain that doesn't happen in any single year classroom.
You talk a lot about a feeling of safety for the student. Is that literally safety, or is that just another name for comfort? How deep does that go?
I think it's both aspects of that we kind of take for granted as adults the emotional aspect for children of creating a new relationship with a stranger. We say, well, you know, tough it out. We did it. You'll do it. You'll be fine. And, you know, that's true. Most children are fine or will be fine. But there can also be a significant emotional cost to many children who take time to really get used to a new adult, an adult who doesn't know them and who needs several months to get to know them. So there's a lot of anxiety that children have about new school years. There's excitement, but there's also anxiety. And the trade-off for that is if you have a 2 or 3 year relationship, you minimize that cost of that anxiety, of that uncertainty, And when you have a good classroom situation going, the child can also connect what goes on in the summer. I found that in a number of occasions where I interviewed families, interviewed the parents, talked with the children, talked with the teacher, and the children were quite excited about going back to work with the teacher the next fall because they'd had a good year and they looked forward to continuing that relationship. One of the questions that, you know, when parents ask me about this, they say, well, you know, isn't there something there's, you know, missing or something that I lose by not getting a new teacher every year for my child? And in response, I say, well, you know, where else in your child's life do you say, okay, I've set up a good relationship for this child with a doctor or with a dentist or, you know, with someone else who has a role with a babysitter or whatever. And where else in your child's life do you say, okay, we've come to a specific date and I'm going to end this relationship, even though it works really well, and I'm going to make my child start off with some complete stranger? You know, nobody does this other than in school, and we do this in school to a large extent because when the Prussians were doing this or when Horace Mann was doing this, we didn't have any understanding of the importance of the relationship between children and teachers in terms of how this affects their learning.
Still to come, my conversation with David Marshak continues with a look at implementing his approach in large and small schools. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1215. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. My guest today is David Marshak, a former school district administrator in Vermont and a professor and researcher in Seattle. We're talking about his book, Kids Need the Same Teacher for More Than 1 Year, and I asked him if this is easier to get started in larger or smaller school districts.
Well, the key to implementation on a district level is that you really have to invite teachers into the process. In 1990, Kentucky passed a school reform law that, in addition to creating their first standards and statewide testing, would have required the creation of multi-year classrooms in all their elementary schools by 1996. And they did this, the legislature did this in Kentucky without consulting with the teachers at all. So when the elementary teachers found out about this, they were outraged, and they organized, and they fought back, and they got this repealed. So, you know, it doesn't work if you have teachers who are used to doing things in a certain way, and this is obviously a critical aspect of their working lives, and you come in and say, okay, we're going to compel you next year to do this completely differently. On the other hand, you can engage teachers in the process, and one of the ways that I did this when I was working as a district administrator in Vermont was to have teachers who were in single-year classrooms interact with some of our teachers who were in multi-year classrooms so they could begin to see the benefits. My experience of this over 25 years is that teachers who have chosen to teach in multi-year classrooms love it. One of the most common things they say once they get there is that they would never want to go back to single-year teaching. And so there are models all over the country of people who are teaching both in elementary and in middle school in 2-, 3-, and 4-year classrooms who could help other teachers understand why there's a benefit to this, and not only the children, but one of the biggest benefits to teachers if you work with a child for 2, 3, or 4 years is that you really get to see the outcome of your work. What happens in a single-year classroom is that often, you know, you work with a child for 9 months and you see some learning, but, you know, it's things are not really coming together and you're frustrated and the child is frustrated. And you know, we know that children don't develop, they don't grow, they don't become themselves, they don't learn on a schedule, that there is a lot of inconsistency in child development. So one of the benefits over a 2 or 3 year period is that teachers really get to see how their work matters to every child, not just to some of them.
Well, one thing you mentioned about teachers being resistant to change, anything in the education system really seems to be resistant to change unless you can show some form of success, unless there's a way to measure that, yes, this is a better way of doing that. Do you see a way of doing that, of just demonstrating, other than just teachers saying, well, I think it's better?
Well, there is a body of research, and I describe this in the book, that was conducted primarily in the 1970s and 80s, because that's when a lot of attention was being paid to, particularly to looping classrooms, which is where looping is where the children start in a grade level with the teacher, say first grade, and then they move to second grade with the same teacher. And so the research is not conclusive because, very little educational research is ever conclusive. But there's a set of studies that were conducted, and about 2/3 of them showed better outcomes for multi-year classrooms. About 1/3 of them showed that there was really no difference, and almost none of them, or I think actually none of them, showed that multi-year classrooms were inferior to single-year classrooms. So there is something of a research base that also supports this contention. I think the strongest evidence, and this is true unfortunately in a lot of educational innovation because we don't have the research that we need, the evidence I think is conclusive in the teachers and parents who have had the experience. So another aspect of this is that if you talk to parents who have been in situations where their children work with teachers for 2 to 3 or 4 years, you find pretty much consistently that the parents understand and can tell you about the benefits of this. And one of the aspects of the book is that I interviewed dozens and dozens of parents in each of these schools and invited them to tell me about what they saw as what was going on in these multi-year classrooms. And the parents were pretty much universally positive about how valuable the relationship with the teacher was for their child, academically to begin with, but also socially and emotionally.
Not every child-teacher relationship is going to be good, and is this something that could be a worry?
Sure. This is the two main concerns that the parents raise is, the first one is, what if my child gets a bad teacher? And my belief is that the vast majority of elementary school teachers range from good to great, but there certainly are teachers in elementary school who shouldn't be there. And right now, the single-year system, unfortunately, tends to keep these folks in the classroom because when your child gets a new teacher in September or August, it takes parents a while to begin, in most cases, to begin to figure out that there's a problem. And it may take a few months. And so we're talking about, again, November or even December. And then parents have to decide if they want to make an issue of this, if they want to go talk to the principal, if they want to make something happen or try to make something happen. And often what parents decide is, well, I'll just put up with it. I don't really want to get involved in a conflict. I don't want to make things more difficult for my child because if the teacher knows that I'm complaining and my child's still in her classroom, that's going to be a problem. And so often parents say, I'll just wait this one out and I'll go talk to the principal and demand that we get a better teacher next year. And this is, I've heard this happen many, many, many times over the years. So our current system, unfortunately, it keeps people in the classroom who shouldn't be there. On the other hand, if there's a situation where there's just a personality conflict or there's just something going on that the classroom really just isn't working for a particular child with a particular adult, this can be addressed in a problem-solving method. So, for example, when I was working the district in Vermont as assistant superintendent, we had a lot of multi-year classrooms. And each year we had one or two problems that would come up. And we'd get together. We'd have the teacher and the parents and the child and the principal, and I would sit in usually to represent the district. And we would try to figure out what the problem was. And on some occasions, we were successful. There was something going on, and we were able to address it and resolve the problem and make things better. And, you know, the placement worked out. The child stayed with that teacher, and it worked out. On a couple of occasions, we were not able to do so, and we just switched the child to another teacher. And the key to this, doing this successfully, is not blaming, is saying there's nothing wrong. We're not saying there's something wrong with the child. And we're not saying there's something wrong with the teacher. What we're saying is, well, we seem to have a personality conflict, and we haven't been able to resolve it, so let's just move that child with another teacher. And so, again, my experience is that this doesn't come up very often, but, you know, that it is a resolvable problem, and it's certainly far, the cost of this is far less than the current cost, which is we have an enormous cost that we're creating for ourselves by moving children to a new teacher every single year and then requiring 2 or 3 months for that teacher to get to know these children.
David Marshak is a former school district administrator in Vermont and a professor and researcher in Seattle. His book is called Kids Need the Same Teacher for More Than 1 Year. You can learn more at kidsneedthesameteacher.net. So we heard about how having the same teacher for more than 1 year can be important, but maybe it's all about how the brain develops. Anyway, that's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Early exposure to stress can seriously degrade a child's ability to focus and learn in later years. Helen Neville, professor of neuroscience at the University of Oregon, describes a newly developed method that can reverse the developmental damage done by stress.
For decades, researchers have documented the markedly lower IQs, lower language skills, lower self-regulation, attention, and brain function and structure in children living below the poverty line. Since lower socioeconomic status, or SES, typically occurs across multiple generations, many argue that these differences are of genetic origin. However, genes are not destiny, partly because the expression of genes depends on environment, a process known as epigenetics. First, we show that there are no differences in the distribution of gene variants between higher and lower SES children. Secondly, we developed an intervention that makes lower SES children and their parents look indistinguishable from higher SES children and parents. Our lab studies human brain development with a focus on the changeability or neuroplasticity of different brain systems. We have learned a considerable amount about which systems are least changeable, and we know exactly when others are open to change. Using this knowledge, we targeted one very malleable system in lower SES children in Head Start, selective attention. That is, the ability to select one of several possible visual objects, auditory conversations, or ideas to focus on and enhance its signal while suppressing unattended inputs. After this 8-week inexpensive program, children resemble higher SES children on measures of language, cognition, and brain functions of attention. There is now strong economic motivation to reduce the neurological differences induced by socioeconomic inequality. Improving these systems in lower SES children will improve educational outcomes, increase earnings and employment, and decrease crime and incarceration.
That was Helen Neville of the University of Oregon.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.